Gyanatimi Randhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Nama Shreshtam Manamapi Shati Putra Matra Swarupam Rupam Tasya Grajamurupurim Maturim Goshtamatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Sri Gurum Tam Natosmi. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yatav Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sabadhutang Parijana Sahitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam. So this is the biggest preaching project in Srila Prabhupada's plan for fulfilling Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire. The biggest project is, you'd think, what is that? We're going to do something big in the cities. No, go away from the cities and farm the land. So it might not seem like preaching, but it brings to fulfillment all of Srila Prabhupada's social comments that the whole of modern society is demoniac, killed. Of course, Srila Prabhupada famously said that the modern schools are slaughterhouses, but actually the whole society is just the slow roast. Like the slaughterhouse, you quickly get your head cut off, but in the whole society, it's like a slowly being roasted alive. Divanishihi ajale. Day and night burning. So this is the biggest preaching project, to show people who don't believe it that you can live a happy, fulfilled life with all your material necessities just by living on the land, even though they wouldn't be in the world if all their forefathers hadn't lived on the land. And how can you live like that? But up until a short time ago, people did. People are so much brainwashed. Even in India, where until a short time ago, I mean, when I came to India first to stay here 30 odd years ago, electricity was uncommon. Even in Calcutta, I didn't go to Bombay till sometime. I hardly spent time in Bombay till later. But maybe in Delhi it was there. But in West Bengal in general, there was no electricity. TVs were rare. The word internet had yet to be coined, because there was no internet. So people were living like that until a short time ago. And then people now, they don't believe that you can live in any other way than that is there of the modern world. Just like in Dubai, I believe it was, or somewhere recently in the Middle East, I was checking in at the airline counter and I had this book by Sahadev Prabhu, Dr. Sahadev Das, in which the title of the book, I don't show such books. If it was Bhagavad Gita, I wouldn't keep it out when I'm checking in. But the title was Communism, Capitalism, and Cowism. And the young woman at the check-in desk asked, what's that book about? It's, you know, it's an interesting title, isn't it? And I said, I told her, I said, it's, well, communism has failed, capitalism's a mess, so the idea is to go back to a simple agrarian way of life. And she said, well, sounds like a nice idea, but it's not possible now. And that's the general response. Why is it not possible? Why do people think it's not possible? Because people are used to living with artificial necessities. Srila Prabhupada coined this term. It's an interesting term, isn't it? Because if something's actually a necessity, then there's no question of being artificial. It just means that it's imagined to be a necessity. And there's an actual necessity is something that's substantial that you really need. What are the necessities? Roti, kapra, makan. Bread, which means food, clothing, and shelter, some house to live in. So these are the basic necessities which people throughout time have had, but nowadays these are actual necessities for living. And actually in India, even clothing is not really necessary, especially in southern states, Tamil Nadu. It's not really necessary, but for the sake of propriety, it's required. Although still, you do see some people here working in the field with just a kopin, still, because you don't need any more clothing than that. Artificial necessities are always increasing. No one had a necessity, say, how many years ago? 20 years ago for a cell phone, because there weren't any cell phones. And no one needed it. But now there are cell phones, and now it is a necessity. It's just increasing. The artificial necessities are increasing. And when people get married, they have to, there's so many things, a mixie, and fans, electric fans. And nowadays, probably it's going to be AC more and more. And then it's a necessity. It's in modern India to have at least it's considered a necessity, even by village people, to have a motorbike or at least a moped. Even moped, I think mopeds, they're going to stop manufacturing them soon because they're just for poor people, and no one wants to be poor. So people, they take a loan and then they get a motorbike, and a list, it goes on and on and on. And then people, they're training up to become millipedes in their next life by having, you know, 20 pairs of shoes. You can only wear one pair of shoes, right? And so, but people, they have slippers and sandals and boots, fashion boots, and then exercise shoes, and then some other kind of shoes, and it just goes on and on. And then the cupboard is full of all clothes, which they don't, you know, how many can they wear at one time? So artificial necessity, more and more and more. Even gold, Srila Prabhupada noted that previously in India, and I guess in societies throughout the world, whatever people used, it was something valuable, just like people would use brass pots. And if they break, you can mend them. And or if you really get in a hard time, you can take them to the pawn shop, because the material it's made out of has value. So everything, but things made out of plastic, they have no redeemable value. Gold jewelry, well, it's for decoration. And it's valuable. So everything people used had some value. Or otherwise it was just very simple, just like cooking. There's no, you don't have to buy a stove, you just make it at home, that's all. Just make it, and then it needs a little mud now and then to keep it working. So nowadays there are so many artificial necessities. You need a machine for everything. But this is revolutionary. In the real sense of the term, revolution means to come back, to go around and come back to the original point. So this is revolutionary. To live like this. Who can live like this? Srila Prabhupada said that this simple living and high thinking, you can only live simply if you have bhakti. Who will do this? We're doing this to be devotees. So who will live like this? Who wants to be Krishna conscious and who wants to give their family Krishna consciousness? They can live like this. Otherwise, if you're more concerned with artificial necessities than you are with Krishna consciousness, then you can't live like this, because there are difficulties compared to modern life. Not having electricity means it's going to be very hot in the summer. You get used to it if you just put your mind to it. If you don't think if you just commit yourself that I'm going to stay here, then you just stay. That's what happened to me. I went from England to India to live in India, and I committed my mind to stay. I could have just hopped on a plane and gone back to England at any time, but I came here to serve Srila Prabhupada's mission. I'm going to stay. So it was hot, but once you're committed, you don't notice. Like the same example, if you're going to fast, you commit yourself to fast, then you can feel the emptiness in the stomach, but you're committed to do so, and it's not that difficult. But if you're always thinking, well, maybe I should just, take a little fruit and maybe a little halava. If you're all the time thinking, when's my fasting, when are we going to break the fast? And it becomes like a torture. And then you can't do it. And then you just break the fast. But if you're committed, then you do it. So if you're committed to stay, that, all right, okay. We can go down to the city where there are electric fans which work when there's power supply, when there's current. And it's hot here and it's uncomfortable, but we're going to stay to serve for the sake of Krishna consciousness. So those who have made that commitment, they've put Krishna consciousness first, and understanding the importance of these projects, they can stay. Or in the cold in the winter. Here it's cold in the winter. And maybe, how hot is it in the sun? It gets much less than, say, so what, it goes up to 32 or something? Don't know exactly, yeah, but it's...
We asked one person here in the university, he said about 28 to 34.
28 to 34 is the maximum. 34 is within tolerability, without fans. Once it gets up above that, it gets a bit hard going. But 34 is quite tolerable. Hot. Actually, anything's tolerable. If you don't have any facility, you just have to tolerate it. That's all. Yeah. So, who will carry this project forward? Those who value Krishna consciousness more than anything else, and who understand the need for these projects. What is the need for this project? Well, one major factor is understanding that the whole modern society is, the whole setup is demoniac, and it's soul killing. Not just the school, everything about it is soul killing. And you want to give your children a better time, give yourself a better chance for Krishna consciousness by living with devotees, associating with devotees. And practicing to be free from sense gratification. There is some austerity, all right, that's good. It's good for Krishna consciousness, isn't it? And living with devotees means that our entertainment is chanting Hare Krishna. And living with devotees means that we don't have to associate with karmis. We have our own way of thinking. We don't have to associate with people who are eating meat and all the time talking nonsense, or just in the consciousness of money all the time, who are in anxiety all the time. One of my godbrother, Abhiram, he told me he's a businessman, and he told me he's some lawyers. He was doing some work with them, and he's in America. And he couldn't even talk with them, even materially. You think lawyers, highly educated people, that even materially you think you talk with something, there's some intellectual subject, talk about some art or something like that. So the only things these men were interested in talking about was football and sex. That's all. Yeah, lawyers, and no higher aspirations. They're just same as the shudras in the factories. So we've come to escape that demoniac society, but we have to understand it's demoniac. It's really not a good place to be. If you want to be Krishna conscious, then the city, you can be there for preaching. Otherwise, it's better to be in our own devotional communities. Get away, and get away from that demoniac society. And again, this is preaching to show people that there is a better way of life in all respects to that of the demoniac society. That you don't have to live, even materially, you don't have to live in clouds of smog, like in Delhi. I think it's the world's most polluted city. Where there's, you see like clouds of smog, especially in the winter, the fog mixes with the smog, and it just like stays there pretty much all day. So you don't have to live in that. You don't have to live in the cloud which you can't see, the cloud of mass anxiety and stress. We were just talking about that in Bangalore. You see, people look as stressed out as they do in the West, because it's the same syndrome. They're just completely stressed out. It's the same kind of working life, competitive working life, hard work. No one likes anyone else, and loans to pay off. Social, apart from job competition, there's social competition. You have to look fashionable and all this nonsense. So no fresh food, there's no happiness in modern life. In the city, particularly in the cities, still in the small towns, in some parts of America, still people are kind of nice. And even in New York City, for that matter, you can just start talking to people. They don't make friends. They'll talk with you in a friendly way. That's one thing in New York. So you just walk up to someone, and if they're in the mood, you can just strike up a conversation with them about anything. But that's it, you know. That's it. Then you don't ask them. You don't no further contact with them. In the small towns, people still can be very nice. But the city life especially is soul-killing. So we have to preach in the cities also. But the program that Srila Prabhupada had was that this, to dismantle this modern demoniac society. You don't need to live like this. You shouldn't live like this. And even they themselves, the karmis themselves, know that it's economically unsustainable. There are figures in America, it's like 70 to 80% of the people seek psychiatric, they take psychiatric treatment in their lifetime. It means the whole country's crazy, isn't it? It's a country of, I mean, they're literally crazy people. And it's increasingly like that in India. So these projects of what? For being Krishna conscious. Don't unnecessarily make it complicated, because we have this complicated way of thinking, and we due to being raised in the complex society, and we have this idea that you always have to make more and more plans and do something new and develop something more and more. Okay, now you're just establishing the project. Establish it, bas, finish. Don't make any more, you know, big plans, and we're going to do this. Just live simply as soon as possible. Just like previously in the villages, people didn't have plans. They maybe didn't even know the word plan. There's nothing. I mean, life goes on in a very ordinary kind of way. You know, there are festivals throughout the year. There's no particular plan, just it's celebrated the same way every year. And just life goes on in a regular, routine way. There's the idea that we have to change something, do something different. That was actually against the old culture. In the old culture, if anyone wanted to do something new or different, that was considered something wrong. Why are you doing something different? We've done it this way. This is the way our father did it, our grandfather, great-grandfather. Why do you think you know something better? We just do it the same way, that's all. It's worked well enough for them, you know, right? There's still that consciousness is there, somewhat in the village. So no need for any plans, changing, development, progress. Just throw these words out, all these words. And just establish a culture. There are festivals, regular festivals, and then when children are born, there's, you know, some celebration, and just like that, do it in a Krishna conscious way. Morning and evening come together, chant Hare Krishna. For the farms, maybe you're not going to have like very deep lectures on Vedanta Sutra and all this, but you can have stories, Ram Leela. You can just do, Ram Leela, you can just do continuously, just narrate it from the beginning to the end, and then start again. And people, devotees, they'll hear it. And it used to be in North India that even the farmers and most of the people, they're not educated, but they know the whole Ramcharitmanas. They didn't sit down and learn it. They don't read, but they just heard it over and over again so many times that they can just say it themselves, and they take pleasure in doing that. So that's the culture to establish, just living simply and happily and preparing to go back home, back to Godhead. That's the program. Who can do it? Who has a desire to do so? Faith in Krishna, love for Krishna, and faith in Srila Prabhupada's words, that what Srila Prabhupada says should be done. If we do so, we will not be the loser, we will be benefited by doing so. And the whole world can be benefited by doing so. So, devotees who don't have very great material aspirations, this whole thing is drilled into you. It's very much in India at the moment, and to be ambitious and do something and make something of your life. Go ahead. People are not thinking like that. Yes, this all these crazy ideas by which they enslave you by thinking that you're making something of your life, you're improving your life, but it just means that you're completely brainwashed into being exploited. So it requires a mentality just to understand that we don't, this whole society is just nonsense. So that has to be preached also. This whole, otherwise people may not stay, and the children, they have to learn that. So they should learn what's in Prabhupada's books, and you have to tell them we're living like this because we're like this, and this is what we're going to do. And you can go to the city if you want, but it's hell. You get alcohol, and there's mixing of boys and girls. You get all this, you get money, but it's hell. You tell them it's hellish. And some may want to go and experience it, but if they've been raised like this, they won't stay very long. That will be their success when you see the grandchildren of the young devotees now, and the great grandchildren. And that may not take so much time, because I just read in England now, in Britain, the average marriage age of women is 30. But naturally, girls start to have children age 14, 15, 16. So to have great grandchildren isn't a surprising thing. We used to see it. It's quite a common thing to have great grandchildren. All the four generations living together, even sometimes five generations. So, yeah, it's a challenge. It's a challenge to bring all these things in the midst of the demonic society. So, how are we going to do it? With great faith in Prabhupada and Krishna, who provides everything. Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam eko bahunam yo vidadhati kaman. Krishna provides everything. Great faith in the holy name of Krishna, that should be cultivated, and love for the holy name of Krishna. That we devotees have a taste for chanting. You can chant for hours. What are you going to do after dark? Chant Hare Krishna. Go on chanting. What are you going to do when the rain is pouring in the rainy season? Chant Hare Krishna. That's your entertainment. The natural thing that you do. So bring in this culture. No mental speculation. The mental speculation will destroy these projects. Thinking this way, that way. Just keep it simple. Mentally, physically, everything. Even, you know, like fancy farming techniques and this and that. Just keep it simple. Everything simple. Having said that, we'll jump in the car and go back to the city. But this is actually where the real life of the ISKCON should be. ISKCON is imbalanced in so many ways, because Srila Prabhupada said this is the next phase of our movement. And that next phase was to be this, that all right, so many people are coming and joining our movement, and this was what they're supposed to be doing, living on the land, and we miss that. So it's imbalanced. It's a city movement for city people with city consciousness mixed up with their Krishna consciousness. But this was supposed to be the next phase, and that should be the natural follow-on from the book distribution and city preaching. is that people read the books, they become uninterested in material life, they want to live with devotees, and they go to the farm. And when, once it's started and there are many people doing it, it becomes easier for others to join. And it's when they see that they're living healthy, happy lives, then more people will want to join. But we don't have that. So now, this is the challenge. This is the revolution. And of course, it can come easier in India, because even in the West, people may be interested to join such communities, but the cultural and religious aspect is a big block for many of them. But it's not in India. For people to take to Krishna consciousness is much easier in general for people in India. You know, for women to wear saris, it's not a big, like in the West, for a woman to wear a sari, it's a big statement that they've left their own culture and they're part of another culture, foreign culture. You can imagine it's a difficult thing for them to do, but not in India. they don't wear anything. It's still in Tamil Nadu, most of the women, they don't wear anything else. The salwar kameez didn't, for married women, didn't get down here yet. Maybe they'll miss that phase altogether and just go into jeans. Just like in the villages, they never had landline phones. They just went, you know, the village people in general, they never had landline phones. They just went straight into cell phones. So it might be like that. All right. So all you have to take prasadam, is it? So I was just trying to summarize some of the points there, which I'm sure your Savyasachi in particular is well aware of. Anything else? There are so many things to be said. This is just like trying to give a summary of what the whole project's about. The most important difference is the association of devotees. Because while they were living in the town, they would come to the temple, and at home they're devotees, but all around them are non-devotees. Relatives. Why are you chanting Hare Krishna? Why are you spoiling your life? Blah, 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 blah. Get away from the relatives and come and join the devotee, make the family of devotees. So that's very helpful for them, for their Krishna consciousness.
The economic thing is yet to be experienced. The freedom from, then you become self-sufficient, and then you see your
home. About self-sufficiency, that's something I wanted to talk to you about, actually. Because we're talking about self-sufficiency, but then you're telling, was it Mukunda? Mukunda Nrisinghe was saying that when, in their family tradition, when they marry their daughter, they give so much gold. And we don't have a gold mine here. And if we did, the government would come and take it over. So I thought about that somewhat, and thought that basic self-sufficiency is there, but there are also, in traditional society, but there are also rich people, landowners, rich merchants, who look after these things for the ordinary people. Just like if someone you're a barber by caste, a barber or a potter or whatever, they're in the village, they'll be under the local landowner, and they're, you know, very submissive to him, and he's telling them what to do, and this, he bosses them around and this and that. But when it comes the time for their kid's marriage, he looks after it. It's his duty to do so. It's their duty to serve all the others, and it's he's a rich man, and it's his duty to look after these things. That's why you find that sometimes it happens that rich people, they lose all their wealth, especially if they're in that kind of situation where their richness is supposed to be used for the whole community, and people come to them and say, see, my daughter has to get married, and they'll give them some money in the modern age, or what, they'd give them some gold. And when they can't do that, so they become deprived of their wealth, they just feel total like this Mr. what's his name?
Udaya.
Yeah, so people would come to him, and he'd always give something to help others, because that was the culture. Now he's not even so much that he doesn't have money that hurts, but the fact that, you know, that's been his role throughout life to help the people, poorer people in these situations, and he can't do it, and it really hurts him. So self-sufficiency is there, but actually there should be some. If the whole society was set up like this, and then there would be rich people like that. So maybe we do need some outside sponsors on a permanent basis for this kind of thing, because by growing vegetables, we can't produce enough wealth for when some extra is needed like that. So that's a consideration. Well, these are details, how much gold should be given. Well, it is. It's the gold, as I was saying. It's like it's a hedge, or it's a, what's the word for that? It's a backup. If just like if all the crops fail or something, then you have some gold, and you wouldn't usually sell it, you'd pawn it to get you over a difficult time. It's like for an emergency. It's not usually to be sold, but just in case it's like that. In Bangladesh, they used to, in their mud house, they'd dig a hole in the ground and not tell anyone where the hole is, and it would be buried there. In Tamil Nadu also? Same thing, yeah. Sometimes, like, the whole family would die in a fire, and then, you know, gets lost. And no one knows where it is, and then someone digs it up, you know, 100 years later or something. So, yeah, these things should be discussed, because that is there in traditional society, that there are rich people at the time of, there's some time when some extra is needed that cannot be produced from the normal way of working. So that's a point to discuss. It's an important point, actually, because people are coming and living there, they're dedicating everything, and they expect, you know, to be helped at every stage. They'll give all they can, but we have to reciprocate also for all their needs. And that is a valid, that falls within the realm of valid necessities. Some gold for the girl at the time of marriage. That's very much part of the culture, and it makes sense. Okay, the cooking's finished, so I guess you can all go and take prasadam. Yeah.
Regarding these festivals, devotees are asking, there are many local festivals, traditionally, but not in our
Gaudiya. Yeah, I wouldn't get too much into the local festivals. Do our own festivals. You can go there to their festivals and do kirtan if you want. But don't start doing them here. And don't get too much into their festivals. What are they?
Pongal.
Oh, I see, the local devotees are used to doing it. What is pongal? There's cow pongal. What's that? They worship the cows. Hmm? Well, you can do cow puja, that's nice. We do that at the time of Govardhan puja. Worship the land. Maybe you could do as the wife of Vishnu.
That's through the worship of cows, everything is done.
Just come and the land and the cook and in the land they just celebrate.
They go on the land and cook something. I see.
They just don't work with 2-3 days in the festival day.
So you can go around and do Sankirtan all around the villages, village to village Sankirtan. That's all. But we don't want to get it like into Ayappa and Murugan festivals and all this kind of thing.
Christmas.
No. Then there'll be Bakri Eid and Ramadan and forget it. Then we have to make a vegetarian goat or something. Cut its throat and have some tomato juice come out.
Sacrifice jackfruit.
Tastes like meat. What do you want to do that for? Yeah. Actually, this pumpkin, the way they smash it with the kumkum, it looks almost like an animal sacrifice, doesn't it? Yeah, it looks like some cat got run over or something. But it's just a pumpkin, that's all. Who told me that? That was Dina Pavana. He's from a Gujarati family, Bhatia family. Bhatia means like Sindhi. That's their family background. So they came from Sindh or from Pakistan. His father came. And then he's been living in Dubai most of his life. So one of his cousin brothers or something went to England for education, got married to an English girl, and she would never come to India. She thought that they're all poor, poverty stricken. I don't want to go there. And then after years and years and years, she finally came to some marriage, and she saw all the women dressed in gold with silk saris, and she just broke down in tears because the average English woman could never imagine having such. No, I mean, you could say a low, not very wealthy family, but small business family, something like that. But actually, in England, you're not allowed to own gold; it's illegal. But people don't have that kind of, they don't have such nice clothes, silk size. Dina Pavana, what was his name before? Deepak Bhatia. Deepak Bhatia, you know him very well, I guess, is it? So they think that people are just like totally poverty stricken. That's all the propaganda. And some people are, but you were telling me in Malawi, it's like reckoned as the world's fourth poorest country or something.
Second
or third. But actually everyone eats well. It's just they don't have liquid money. they haven't, most people haven't entered the money economy. They don't need money, and so they call them poverty stricken. But they probably eat a lot better than the people in London. And the food in any Western city is just rubbish. There's no flavor, there's no nutrition. And everyone, you see the devotees come for prasadam with all these little vitamin pills and this and that. They all have a set of vitamin pills. There's nothing in the food. It's all grown in Holland with nowadays. Well, all the vegetables are grown. Is it in Holland or Belgium?
Holland.
And with this, what is it called? Hypography or something. They're growing them out of water with some chemicals and just no flavor, no food value. And it's nothing there. But the people in Malawi, they have much better food than the people in London could even imagine. But they're poverty stricken. We have to develop, and the World Bank has to go in there and civilize them and send all their children to school. But this is what we want to show, how you can live like this. And we're not at that, we're nowhere near that stage yet, but there will come the time when the demons, they'll see. They'll be very much against this. So that when the demons, they try to stop our farms, then we'll know we're really on the right course. In fact, in the 1970s, there was so much demoniac opposition to our movement. It's unfortunate that they're not opposing us anymore. That means we became insignificant. It's not that they stopped being demons. But they stopped. Yeah, well, in Hungary they're doing something, right? They have a community and they're well accepted. They're showing an alternative lifestyle, and demons want to stop them. So, if the demons, they didn't stop being demons. So if we are accepted by them, that's a very bad sign. They should be afraid of us. Actually, it could be a good sign if they were in the process of taking up what we're doing. Prabhupada, I mean, he liked that. He would probably appreciate it that when in the court in America, they threw out the case against our movement for brainwashing and said Hare Krishna is a bona fide religion. But we were on a roll. We were on a strong preaching roll. And so that was good, but then we just, somehow or other, various factors, our movement just became mediocre in America. That was a good time for preaching it, really. America's a good potential, special place. Niranjan Swami told me once there was some case. That was like a major case. There are all kinds of cases against our movement all over America. And then he was there in Boston. Like our devotees, they're like 22 years old and just dropouts from the university. They become devotees and they have to go to court with all these experienced 50-year-old lawyers and all this. And there was some case, and some case in which the prosecution pulled out a picture of Lord Narsingadev and said, "This is what they worship as God," and they won the case. And then it went to the High Court in, not Maryland, Massachusetts, and the judge there said that this court is not going to judge on any religion. And just threw it out. That's some advantage of America. It's in many. I remember. I'm getting off the subject here now. But my old friend in England, Rancho Prabhu. He was called to America during that 2 month marathon because he's an artist. Somehow or other, they knew he was an artist. So he was just, one day he just vanished from the temple. There came a phone call for America. He was on a plane to LA. and he joined that marathon. And I, Chaitanya Charitamrita, there were some Bhagavatam volumes. I remember I asked him once, there was a beautiful picture in the sixth canto of Chitraketu with Ananta, and I asked him, who painted that picture? And he said, well, I did this part, and Pariksha did this, and Vishnu Das did this. He was like, that's the way that you'd paint until you collapsed, and then someone else would come and paint the rest. That was the way they were doing the great, beautiful paintings. Anyway, I remember shortly after he came back from America, he was talking to them. He said, it's really a special place. He says, people are really pious compared to England. He said, you know, people believe in God. Pragosh also, our God brother. One of his lines on Sankirtan, I don't know, the atheists are coming up there strongly in America now, but one of his regular lines on book distribution was, you give people a book and say, well, you believe in God, don't you? You say, oh yeah, sure. That's the thing. Whereas in England, they look at you, you know. It's like, it's the kind of question you don't ask people. It's like, it's a taboo question. It's like, you just don't do that. So, anyway, getting off the subject. But if America, now if we had these farms, I've said this many times, Mahatattva said to me, was calling me to this rainbow festival in America. You know, every year we go and we bring back, you know, 10 or 12 devotees, and out of them, 2-3 stay every year. I told him, look, you don't have to go anywhere. You just make these farms, like Prabhupada said. These people will come to you in many more numbers. This is what they, you know, simple living, ecological living, Eastern religion or whatever. They don't like the word. Religion's a bad word among those people. But Eastern something or other, and then mysticism. Make your own music, traditional music, mantras. In Croatia also, right? If you had that kind of setup, people would come, yeah. And people would notice it. The press would notice it. And then you could tell them, look, we got a solution to the, you know, all your economic problems. We got the solution. This is a solution. It's you could tell Croatia, don't join the European Union, join the Hare Krishna movement. it's a solid thing. It's been going on for thousands of years. It's not going to collapse. Krishna's has a sustainable economy. Okay, go take prasad. You won't be there for the. You have your evening lecture. Okay, you all go and take prasadam. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.